listener, welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, and it's Friday, and that means one thing, ITT Sound Off.
Yeah, here we are, doing our thing, ITT Sound Off. What's up, Julio? How you doing, bro?
I'm good.
Okay.
Just keep at it, that's
Keeping at it, right?
Yep.
So our first topic, I'm so glad we're talking about this. We're talking about how the Latinx community is being impacted specifically by the COVID-19 crisis. Now, keep in mind that the global infection cases topped 5 million this week.
Jesus.
5 million. Wow. That's why it's called a pandemic. Yeah. The United States with 1.5 million of those. And we are going to focus specifically about Latinos in the United States. So a new poll by Latino Decisions on Wednesday on behalf of Somos, Unidos, US, and Move On found that 1 in 4 Latinos know someone who's been infected by the coronavirus. And 1 in 3 know someone who has died from this disease. Julio, you are now one of those 1 of 4 because you know me.
I am part of the poll. It's true.
Yeah, there are a lot of us who are Latino or Latina and who have been infected by this disease. It's devastating.
Yes, and I was on that press call and to listen to it, and it actually had Representative Joaquin Castro, the head of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, and also Senator Cortez Masto, mm-hmm. who's the first Latina senator in the history of the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, two of the data points from this poll, Maria, that really hit home with me. One of them has to do with the decisions to gradually reopen. 81% of Latinos believe that governors should reopen businesses on a schedule that works for their state using a gradual phased-in approach based on advice of scientists and health experts. And that's from the poll. The other thing that really hit home, 76% of Latinos believe that we are in this together and need to do what we can to prevent the spread of coronavirus, even if it means a few more weeks of staying at home, missing work and or school. That is a small price to pay in order to save millions from illness or death. 76% of Latinos in this country believe that.
That's so interesting, Julio, yeah. Because you know that that's like in my heart.
Yeah.
I'm like, please, I don't mind if I'm getting normalized about being in self-quarantine and isolation. We can readjust to integration later. But right now I'm like, just keep doing this. I don't understand how people don't want to keep doing this.
Yeah. So I think like that was something that was a big takeaway that I was like, wow, okay, that's good. But think about those top lines that you said, Maria, especially when we think about how the Trump administration just mishandled this entire pandemic. And I wanted to share another data analysis that came out this week that comes from Columbia University. These disease modelers showed that 36,000 lives could have been saved if this country had implemented physical distancing and stay-at-home policies just 1 week sooner, Maria. So were like looking at March 8th instead of March 15th, like it would have saved 36,000 lives right there.
Wow.
And then when we think about that, right, COVID-19's like, we know it's a fact. Disproportionate impact on people of color, including Latinos. We know that many of those lives lost to this were lost to negligence, especially for people of color.
So I have become a little bit obsessed with trying to understand this story. And as a journalist, it's been, you know, because I love to do face-to-face journalism.
Yeah.
And knowing that this has been the central part of the story.
Yeah.
So our sister podcast, Latino USA, we really worked hard at trying to get an interview inside an intensive care unit here in New York City, the epicenter of the pandemic. And so I got a chance to interview Dr. Susan Cohen. She works in the ICU of Bellevue Hospital in Manhattan. Julio, the person who connected me to Dr. Susan Cohen and got me inside that ICU is a member of LIPS. And you've heard me talk about LIPS.
I love LIPS. What's LIPS again for the people?
It's a little organization of like 25 Latinas, mostly journalists and media people. And we call ourselves Latinas in Power, sort of. I mean, now they are all in power. In fact, one of them got me into the ICU and she didn't want me to mention her name.
Thank you, unnamed friend, but continue.
So we spoke about Bellevue,
right,
because it's the oldest hospital in the country. And so Dr. Susan Cohen told us the question that I wanted to answer: who are the patients that she's caring for? By the way, 35% Latino patients in the hospital, but in the ICU, it was majority Latinos and Latinas, Listen to this.
As a palliative care doctor, one of the things we do is we try to get to know people, who they are as people, right? But most of our patients before coronavirus were so chronically ill that they were no longer working. So the question would be, what did you used to do when you were working? Now it's someone who was at work 2 days ago and is now in the ICU. That's the real difference. I hope that as healthcare providers, we do try to see our patients for who they are, the personhood aspect of people, and hear their stories, you know. But we sort of don't take notice of a delivery person or the person at the construction site as we're driving by, because they're not the people we typically see in the hospital. We typically see people with heart failure, serious lung disease, serious liver disease, cancers. These are the people that end up in the hospital, not young, healthy people. We've had patients in the entire adult age range from late teens to 90s. And, you know, some of the 90-year-olds do well and some of the 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds don't. There's just no way to predict, really.
Wow. So that is from the latest Latino USA podcast, which actually dropped on Friday morning. It's called Inside an Intensive Care Unit in the Heart of the Pandemic. Maria, you're reporting on this. Give me your top line sort of takeaway from all this.
I think when I asked her to tell me who was in the ICU unit, who basically are the people who are fighting for their lives, I said, who's there? And she said, I'm just going to pull out the roster of the names. And she said, more than half of the names are names that are, as she said, traditionally Latinos. And I think that was a moment where I was just like, oh, my God. And I think when she just said, you know, you don't think of the guy who's working construction or who's cooking the food in the back as the people who are going to end up in an ICU fighting for their lives.
Right.
You know, Julio, you have said this, right, that we, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with the New York Times. But for example, they don't really specialize in doing obituaries about people of color, regular people of color. Mm-hmm. Even extraordinary people of color, they're doing a whole thing where they're going back and they're like, oh my God, here are some amazing people of color who we never wrote about when they died. And it's like, how do we expect to understand who is dying?
Right.
And it's, like I said, it's a little bit become an obsession for me because I'm trying to paint the picture.
Right.
And it's black men and Latino men. Mm. Who are they? And it's been, it was a very emotional interview for me as well because of my unnamed friend, you know, when I realized that she was in the ICU, all suited up and holding her phone to the doctor's face to record an interview that I wanted to do. And I'm like, I'm exposing a dear friend of mine.
Yeah.
Ooh, empecé a llorar. I started crying. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah.
Well, thank you. As always, Maria, like you do the work and I appreciate that. Let's move on to our second topic, which is going to look at how this pandemic, and it's something that we've been doing ongoing, right? It's how this pandemic has been impacting immigrants being held in immigration, custom enforcement, ICE detention jails, migrant jails, I like to call them. They say detention centers. I'm calling them migrant jails.
You know what I call them.
Concentration camps.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And as of May 21st, there are 1,181 immigrants who've tested positive in these prisons, which is nearly half of those tested so far.
So that means there's a lot more.
Yes.
We've talked about the death, pobrecito que en paz descanse, of Carlos Ernesto Escobar Mejia, who was held in Otay Mesa Detention Center in San Diego this past Sunday, brought the second death related to this pandemic. And this one of Chong Wong Ang, who died by suicide.
Wow.
Pobrecito. I mean, just the desperation at Mesa Verde ICE Processing Center, all these very, you know, processing center.
Don't get me started.
It's not like Costco here.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactamente, Julio. It's not like fucking Costco.
It's like that was in Bakersfield, but that was a migrant jail. Let's just call it a migrant jail.
After his lawyers had submitted three requests for him to be released because of the pandemic, similar to the death of Carlos, ICE says, this is what ICE says, Chong was supposed to be, quote, in custody because of his previous conviction, which, mind you, he had already served. This is what double jeopardy is called.
Yeah.
He already served time for his crime. He was done.
Well, yeah. And then there's dozens of lawsuits around the country filed by immigrants who are suing to be released. So on Wednesday, I actually had the opportunity to cover a Zoom press conference by the Immigrant Defense Project, which discussed one of these lawsuits. And that lawsuit is demanding that all immigrants be released from the Elizabeth Detention Center, which is a private immigration prison operated by CoreCivic in Elizabeth, New Jersey, literally, you know, across the bridge, across the tunnels from New York City. So we wanted to share this powerful moment by Dr. Alan Keller, who's from NYU's Grossman School of Medicine.
I have been visiting Elizabeth for over 20 years, have probably been there more than 20, 25 times. This is an inherently dangerous and harmful to the health and well-being place under normal circumstances. I want to clearly and unequivocally state that in the context of the COVID pandemic, the Elizabeth Detention Center is not only dangerous, but potentially deadly. I could think almost of no more perfect environment for the spread of COVID than Elizabeth. The conditions are overcrowded. As others have said, there are no windows. And in fact, what windows there were cinder blocked over. Ventilation is poor. Health services historically are quite poor. So this is a recipe for disaster. This virus is going to spread, if it hasn't already, like wildfire.
So Keller's clip really hit with me because he was very like, I've been going there for 20 years. I have visited other detention centers, other migrant jails. And he unequivocally, Maria, said that Elizabeth is one of the most inhumane detention centers in the country. And this is the other part about this lawsuit. One of the plaintiffs who filed this class action lawsuit, his name is Hector Garcia Mendoza. He was deported to Mexico on Tuesday, just hours after a judge had ordered his deportation to be stopped. ICE was like, oops, we sent him. Sorry. Maria, what are your thoughts?
You know, I'm just so sad. This is the result. And we have all been watching this as this happens, right? The dehumanization. That's why In the Thick was created, in fact, was for us to take back the conversation, the narrative, and our power, and to say we are, our lives matter. Black lives matter. In this case, lives of color across the board matter in a pandemic. And so for me, the fact that we're witnessing it and that we're going to lose people. So I wrote something down as you were speaking.
Yeah.
I said, we're going to have to save each other. Now, you and I are journalists. And even though people think that we're activists, in fact, we're journalists. But what I'm saying is
I know what you're saying.
In regards to immigrants in detention in these concentration camp facilities, which, by the way, are making money for people. That's why they're not being
private.
Emptied out. They are not being emptied out because people will lose their jobs. Stock dollars will be decreased in the private prison industry that run these detention facilities. But the thought that the Trump administration is using this moment to expedite the deportation of children.
Yeah.
You know, that they're citing public health. But NBC News showed that as far back as 2017, now DHS Acting Secretary Chad Wolf sought to expedite child deportations in order to discourage Central American asylum seekers, which was what we've been saying all along.
Right.
The intention is to create such harm, trauma, in order to make people who desperately need to be safe to say no. Pues no me voy, me quedo.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about that reporting, which is obvious. I mean, the pandemic is being used as another way to quote unquote limit immigration, and not only the type of immigration or immigration detention that we're talking of, but also green cards and visas and all the entire system. But I will say one thing about that story that came out of NBC News. It solicited sort of this 4-paragraph ICE statement that, you know how ICE, let's just be real as journalists. You've covered ICE for years. I've covered ICE for years. It's the statements that they, you know, well, we don't separate children, right? That's what they say. But then they begin to break it down. And in fact, it's what they don't say that confirms what they do. What they do, you know what I'm saying, Maria? They are doing this. They are separating families. They are ripping children apart from family members. It's been happening. It's ongoing, and it's happening during the middle of a pandemic, even more. And they're also sending infected deportees back to Guatemala. That's happened this week as well. The president of Guatemala is like, what the hell, dude?
No, exacto. You, the listener, has to make the connection that we cannot forget that, again, if we were to say empty ICE detention camps and prisons and jails, the problem is the people who would lose their jobs because of it. So you know what, Julio?
Yeah.
How about if we become creative and find some other jobs that don't involve being a guard in a prison, a jail, or a detention facility? How about we do that, the United States of America, right?
I know. We did want to share a little bit about the impact of the pandemic on jails in New York City. And I just want to share this one data point that came out of New York City jails during the pandemic, and this is via the Gothamist on the second wave in jails, and I'm quoting, between April 24th and May 18th, the jail population rose from 3,869 to 3,954.
So basically just under 100.
So it's rising. So the number of those held pre-trial and unable to afford bail rose from 3,316 to 3,484 the same period.
Over about 150.
Other categories, one-year low-level sentences or technical parole violations, have continued to decrease. So I'm just kind of like, it seems like business as usual during the pandemic, and it just makes no sense.
It's very bad for everybody who is behind bars. Officers are being infected.
Yeah, people are dying.
Who is behind bars in the United States of America? People of color, make the connections. We're going to do this to end this week's. I want to know.
Yeah.
What brought you joy this week?
I got you.
What are you looking forward to for this long quarantine weekend, for your moment of joy, hope, bliss? Talk to me, Julio.
All right. You ready? You know how much I love music. So Snoop Dogg.
Know him. Yeah.
Yeah. We love Snoop Dogg.
Yep.
He came out with a new song called I Want to Go Outside. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been playing it nonstop this morning. I want to go outside. But I'm stuck in the house. I want to take a ride. But I'm sitting right on the couch. It's better to be sick than sorry. Yeah, you got that right. Choose my battles wise. Ain't gonna fight that fight. All my family and friends, I just want them to live. Happy times and good health. Old to the young. Times gonna get better. I know it's slow to come. I couldn't hold my tongue. I got a little message for you. We gonna take our time. Ain't no need to rush. We'll be back in the sun. You know how the Instagram of you like dancing?
Yes.
This week? Yes. I might have to do that this weekend for joy with the Snoop Dogg song. And I'm already predicting it's going to be the pandemic summer hit of 2020. How's that?
Oh, my God. Well, you know what? Actually, so what was my joy? You know, I've been working very hard now on the Spanish edition of Once I Was You.
Oh, yeah.
A Memoir of Love and Hate in a Torn America. Shameless plug. That's my book coming out September 15th. But I've been working.
En ambos idiomas. In two languages.
So I've been working so hard on the Spanish translation. Julio, every single minute that I'm not working at Futuro, I'm doing that.
Yeah.
I'm going to be done this weekend. And so my joy is to attempt to really do some relaxation. And right here, as I was writing under, you know, what I would say about joy, I put dance. So you bring up that Instagram dancing moment. That was me celebrating being alive, surviving COVID, and just literally surviving being alive. So I'm going to dance this weekend.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to dance.
Dance the I Want to Go Outside.
Cue the music. That was Juan Ruiz that I was dancing to. Cue the music. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Remember, go to Apple Podcasts, rate and review us. Also, you can listen to us on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Do follow us on Twitter and on Instagram. We have a lot of fun there at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook. Tell your friends. In the Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell, Noor Saudi, and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Harsha Nahata, all of whom deserve a well-needed break.
Yes.
Our audio engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw, who also deserve a break. Our digital editor, Luis Luna, Raul Perez, also for recording me. Y'all need a break. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kep and ZZK Records. We'll see you on our next episode, dear listener. Thank you so much for bringing us into your hearts and into your minds, into your ears, and into your lives. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Ciao.
Nos vemos, guys. Stay safe out there.
Do you want to make an announcement? No, hold on a second.
What?
What?
Do you want to let them know that we're recording?
Me?
Huh? Yeah. Do you want to let Dad and Julia know?
Announcement in the apartment.
Yeah. Oh, me?
Yeah.
I am recording.
Yeah. Quiet on the set.
Okay.
All right. You know how many years I've been saying that? Quiet on the set. My kids hate that. They're like, oh, shit. I know. Now we have to be
so
quiet.
So triggering.
Listen to him. He's like, it's so triggering.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.